Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hello, everybody.
Brian Brushwood.
Hey, man. You know my favorite thing is about there's nothing unusual about this episode.
I mean, three is the normal perfect thing. Perfect.
Yeah.
One, two, three, you know? Mm-hmm. Stability. Everything you need.
That's
three.
Right.
Three.
Three. Triangle, very strong shape.
Yeah, that's right. Take that.
Pyramid, four sides, but from one angle, looks like three.
Looks like three. So, there we go. We solved it.
Five sides, but, you know. This is not the time or place for that, okay?
If you add a fourth side, suddenly it becomes boring and old, you know, square.
Who cares?
see what I did there?
Yeah.
Yeah, just being a little obtuse there, guys. So, I hate myself for saying that. I really do. Bryce, tell me you're going to erase that from the show.
Sure.
That's the thing is like I hate puns. Like,
wait,
I have,
you do
like, this...
what?
Oh yeah.
Oh my god. My wife has like an irrational soft spot for puns. She can't help but just immediately fall for wordplay.
She loves them.
Yeah, that's yeah. I'm like, ugh. I worked with a guy. He's a really neat guy, but he used to do them all the time, and it drove me nuts. Just drove me nuts. Yeah. I'm like your puns is like my use of sarcasm. You know. Mm. Neither one is really.
Or my use of self-deprecation.
Yeah, yeah. Precisely. Gentlemen, oh my God. Did you watch? Did you see the Star Hopper?
Yes. It hopped. It went up and it went down. It went all around. But most importantly, I saw the headlines saying that the next test would be like, what, 200 kilometers or some crazy crap?
Something like that. The nearest galaxy. So, Star Hopper is the test platform that SpaceX built to test the Raptor engine and the plumbing and the control systems that are going to go into the next generation rocket, the Starship. And they did a test last week where they sent this thing up 500 feet in the air. Now, understand the size of what we're watching the video right now of it in Boca Chica. That thing is six stories tall. That is 60 feet tall.
And to put that in perspective, understand that because this is only a test apparatus, that means like very little fuel. So imagine however big the Star Hopper is when you take a look at the picture, another third of that or more of fuel on top of it, and then another third of that of cargo space on top of it.
Yep. So if you've not seen the video, check it out. It is amazing because you're watching. You know, we watched years ago when they had the Grasshopper test footage showing this rocket taking off in the Texas desert. And, you know, people are like, what's this? First, they thought it was CG. Then people are like, oh, okay, I guess that's something that's cool. And then now we live in an age where rockets land back on the platform. And that was amazing. Now we're looking at a much bigger rocket, a huge rocket that's got the super powerful engine. And they did a test. The thing did what it's supposed to do. Looks amazing. Now the next step is they plan on testing the Starship Mark I, which is going to be that with three engines, as Brian described, about three times the height. So it's going to be a much bigger vehicle. SpaceX says they plan on testing that in a few months. They think they're months away, not years, not even necessarily next year, but this year we might get to see the Starship.
This is that zero to one moment, man. It's like they went from not a thing to a thing, and everything else is iterative, including this, actually. You know, looking back on it, it really was that Grasshopper moment was the most fundamental. Is this even a plausible way to handle stuff? And clearly it was. And everything else is just an engineering problem of iterating to a more robust, more reliable design.
And so what's the scale of the next test, Andrew? Is it going to be the full height ship? Is it going to be the full?
It's going to be next one will be the Mark I, which is going to be the full size of the upper stage, the Starship. And the plan is that is something that they're saying we'll do maybe like a 20 kilometer. They want to do like 20 kilometers up. Okay. And then that works out well. Elon has said, We're waiting for details. There's supposed to be maybe some more, an announcement later this month, a little more details on the plan for it. Possibly orbital. Now, the question people are asking, are they saying, when you say orbital, do you mean just sending one of those things up there on a one-time into orbit, single stage to orbit? Or are you talking orbital, putting this on top of the Super Heavy, which will be the big the booster stack? So if you've seen the photos, if you go to the Reddit forum, which is pretty good, there's Reddit has SpaceX and SpaceX Lounge. SpaceX Lounge updates more frequently. And there's also a couple other, there's like NASA Space Flight has a pretty good forum. You can see some photos of things in construction, big cylinders. Right now, they put everything up inside of this metal tent construction because, hey, there's a hurricane offshore.
Well, back everything up. From the way you phrased it, I almost got the impression that they were implying that it was a single stage to orbit opportunity. Like if there's essentially, I would imagine if there's no payload, if you make it light enough, you could theoretically do single stage to orbit. Is that what they're implying?
Musk has said that they could do, it's capable of that. He says that you could do it. You wouldn't get it back down because it would be going up there and there'd be like no fuel left. But he has said that it seems to be capable of single stage to orbit. Now, he said the same thing, too, as the Falcon 9 booster might be capable of doing single stage to orbit if it's just no payload, no stack on top of it. But we've never done it.
That's extraordinary. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. But the advantage is, if you use a booster, you get everything back.
Yeah, and enough fuel to land. And of course, that's what we really want to see. So single stage to orbit means you burn out all your fuel. You have a hollowed out husk that is as light as can be. It makes it. It does a lap and then falls down and dies in the ocean. Whereas, if we have multiple stages, then we're able to get a robust payload up there and have enough fuel that it can descend onto the planet and then just land itself pretty as can be.
Yeah.
Which is something nobody ever cared about before, before we realized that you could reuse these things. And, we've yet to reuse an upper stage in this capacity. I mean, you could argue, Space Shuttle was such a different kind of beast than anything we'd seen before. And kind of what made it sort of amazing was because the shuttle had its engines, which fired too when it took off, but because they were hydrogen burning, it was higher, it was a much cleaner burn. So it weren't as pronounced as the solid rocket boosters on the side. But, that was, if you consider the shuttle sort of the upper stage too, we got that back. So. That was cool.
I feel like I just watched you do a lot of internal politicking about how to speak nicely about the shuttle when it clearly was. And I don't want to say like a boondoggle or anything, but it's like it was always called a reusable spacecraft. But I feel like there needs to be an asterisk or maybe air quotes around the word reusable.
The thing is that I can sometimes be very dismissive of it because it was so expensive, because so much of it was refurbishable, not so much reusable and all this. But then I'm like, in my head, like, it was amazing, though. It was an amazing part. And that was the sort of thing in my head. I'm like don't – like, because like, yeah, no, that's legit. It was like legit. Cool. But I mean, like the amount of refurbishment that had to be done on it and the solid rocket boosters on the side, the main tank, the solid rocket is like, oh, they're reusable. Well, yeah, sort of, like I can reuse this Coke can by filling up with Diet Coke, but I got to clean it, wash it out, put a new top on. But other than that, reusable, but so it's exciting times and it's a. That watching the video, what's amazing now is like SpaceX, just 5 minutes before the launch, they said, hey, there's a live stream popped up where you could watch it live and up close and see it take off and watch all the different steps. I highly recommend check that out, but also check out one of the feeds. There is a number of different people now who cover this. There are space podcasters who will go rent out houses or borrow, property from people there. And so when you watch these things now, you can see telephoto lenses capturing this in real time and get multiple streams of this. And there are some really good people doing coverage and giving you a lot more explanation on what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, dude, we're in the age of the citizen journalist where all of a sudden, somebody of a middle-class means has all of the infrastructure, all of the technology, all of the branding, all of the reach that they need to cover these things. And so I wonder if I heard you correctly, SpaceX appeared to last minute decide to have an official stream.
Yeah, they think they're with some of these tests. If they think they're going to happen like about 5 minutes before the test, they'll pop up with a live stream.
I mean, in an alternate reality, there's not much of an upside for SpaceX to do an official feed of what might end up being a disaster. I gotta feel that that's kind of a response to the citizen journalism that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're, I think that because it's being covered and things like that, that they might as well show this sort of thing and better to, you know, I think have it be a
outlet for it. And of course, Elon Musk has never been shy about, you know, sharing, you know, the disasters and all that stuff. Yeah. But my point is like, I wonder in a world without YouTube, whether or not this kind of extremely short, semi-impressive, kind of middling, this isn't a display of power. This is a straight up test. Like, well, we just got to see if this is going to work. So it's kind of all downside if it blows up midway, because I'm guessing SpaceX wasn't thrilled when the crew capsule exploded. Right. But I have to feel that there's that upward pressure from the bottom up, given the fact that it's like, well, there's drones flying around, there's people, so-and-so's YouTubing from over there. I have to feel like it's like, well, I guess we have to share all this. It might as well be our feed that gets all the views.
Yeah. Though these sorts of things don't, I mean, this isn't them on an iPhone. Like, it takes some planning to put this stuff together ahead of time.
Yeah, drone footage. But, I mean, they're capturing that. I mean, yeah, it's some effort, but it's you know, getting, when you're at a point where you have that many people willing to show up at their own dime to live stream this thing and stay there for days to capture a test, it's like, oh, well, yeah, probably worth it to, you know, we share it too.
That's the other thing too, is imagine, like, I could imagine in a large institution like SpaceX, somebody somewhere would maybe suggest, well, what if we just chased him off? What if we made it unpleasant for him to do this or whatever? And then immediately some PR person might say, like, that seems like that would be bad because this is somebody who
that's not really the attitude that they usually give
They're doing this from homes, people who live there, around there, and, you know, part of being a good citizen there is if you get your community turning against you, you know, like this would be not good.
No bueno. Not,
Yeah.
But it's exciting. Again, my favorite person to talk about this, I've plugged this show before, is Scott Manley. He's just, you know, I think his YouTube shows are delightful. I learn stuff all the time by, you know, listening to him talk about stuff. He's just he's one of these great explainers and, you know, one of these people that I just love is out there creating cool stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
but you know whose stuff is great to follow?
Yeah.
And support.
Oh,
it's,
who?
It's us.
What? Are you saying that people can support the show by going to patreon.com/weirdthings?
I am saying
they can keep us loud, live, and independent by joining the 275 other patrons.
That's right. Every week, even on Labor Day, even without the person who's not even here.
Yeah, man. I don't know who that would be.
We will. When did you
shave off that beard? Because you look real different in that video.
I had some facial stuff done. we like doing the show. We do it every week here because you guys support it at patreon.com/weirdthings, and you'll get after things like a day or two early. So check it out.
Right.
Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're clever guys. You're clever, right?
Yeah, we've been called that just now. Live on the air.
Yeah, I mean buy or sell differentially. That's fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've talked a little about simulation theory, thought about the idea that, you know, maybe this universe we're living in is manufactured or whatever. And we've talked about the idea of like how would you try to test this? How would you be able to do this? And I think for the first time here, we have an experiment of a creature capable of reason who's also come upon the same sort of their version of this theory and actually put it to the test and found out their world was a lie.
Wait a minute. So you're saying it sounds like you're describing an AI bot that was asked the question, do you exist or do you live in a simulation? And it correctly figured out I am a simulated being.
Close enough.
He said creature, which makes me think it might not be an AI. I mean,
like a biological, like a
living thing.
That
like birds are smart. We know birds are very smart. Maybe dolphin hit a touchpad that said Matrix was real.
You know what I saw today? Quick side jag. When I wake up, usually that's my only opportunity to goof around before we have to start creating content all day. Mm-hmm. And so I was goofing around on Reddit, and there was a video of a crow that had figured out that it could ask humans for help because it was thirsty. And the whole thing plays out of, they're like, oh man, this crow won't leave. And the crow walks over to the bottled water sitting there, kind of taps it twice and then looks at the human, and then taps it twice and looks at the human. And then there's a bit of like, what's going on here? Oh, take it away. Go away. And then the crow's like, but you've got the stuff in the thing. Will you do the thing? And then it ends with them like, provisionally, they open it up, and they pour a bit of water into the cap, and then the bird's like, thanks, bro. And then off it goes.
Great.
Is that amazing?
That's really great. I could see crows are super smart. I mean, we've talked about crows a lot on this show. Like, they're so smart. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them gained sentience and started Morse coding out.
Is that a marker of sentience? The recognition that other creatures are sovereign intelligences? And
I wonder.
It could just be that this particular crow stumbled into the fact that, like, hey man, whenever I peck one of these things, I seem to get water.
Yeah.
You know, but at any rate.
Something against instincts. I don't know. Huh.
Yeah.
So are we close with dolphins / crows? Or AI
bots? Is it a creature?
I would say, I mean, you just kind of covered everything there, Bryce, from physical things to digital things. Yeah. So,
is it a corporeal?
Stop dodging the question, officer. Did we get it?
Well, and that's the question we get into is, whenever we try to come up with definitions of intelligence, we're obviously biased by our own idea of what we think intelligence is. And what's always fun is when we come up with some tests and we see, like, we've seen the ones with chimpanzees doing the, you know, the number matching, like they put the screen, like, numbers appear and they disappear, and the chimpanzees try to figure out where they were before.
Better than humans can.
Than we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, corvids, like crows and stuff, they have capacities that are amazing for us. Sometimes we read stuff into it, like you can see, you know, an example of like a corvid, like on a branch, whatever, sliding down, you know, a roof, and be like, oh, it's playing. Like, no, it's trying to break or get the thing open, but we see it. We want to believe that it's play because it makes it more like us rather than, this thing's alien. But it can be very smart in ways that we don't understand, and you know, and that's kind of a big thing. So,
what a good way to put it. Like, these are genuine alien intelligences, that, and they're in our own backyard. Like, why do we have to hope for something beyond the stars to come up and show up? Like it's right now in our backyards. There are,
You know, we have, you know, you listen to, you know, like, you take whales, you know, whale songs, and the way they behave, you know, they describe them as behaving almost like in tribes, the way the pods behave, the interaction, the songs, the something akin to language takes place there. We're finding that out with elephants. And that's the thing that, like, we're so we can say, yeah, these things are smart, but we're not quite how sure. You know, I wouldn't say that, like, we have no idea what they get. Like, no, we know there's something special there, but we're still, you know, researchers are, you know, trying to figure this out. So
there was, I believe, it might have been a radio lab, might have been something else, but essentially there was, I don't know, some public debate contest podcast that I listened to where they were trying to come up with the best, you know, surprising stories about different creatures. And when it came to whale pods, they were talking about how they, number one, their language reaches very, very far and appears to be very, very nuanced. Mm-hmm. And there was an implication that there was no I in the sense of a pod language, but instead a perpetual sense of we. Sure. Like, we are sad, we are unhealthy, we are unwell. And that tracks when you look at an entire pod of whales that all commit suicide, even though only one of them was sick. Mm-hmm. And so it may be that there's a hive mind consciousness,
I mean,
that they are doing.
A lot of their societies are pack-based or hive based, if you're talking about insects, like those, that's how they cluster in the wild. So
exactly,
it would not be crazy that their language reflected that.
Maybe. I mean, I don't, you know, I've been reading a book, I think James Glick, The Information. He talks about how when explorers went to Africa, the European explorers there, and they heard the drums. They heard the drum language. They realized the drums are a communication system. We tried to put this into our own context.
Quick side jag, if I remember correctly, just let me know if I'm on the right track. I think there was like a high note and a low note, and then and it would be just drumming, which would travel miles and miles and miles that people could hear, but then they realized that there was a syntax, and it's essentially there are vowels. It's like, you know, up, down, down, up, but not anything as rudimentary as or as specific as Morse code, but essentially it was just straight up talking in this language.
But I think the critical part though was that they first tried to put it in the context of a tonal language like they have, you know, in Chinese or something like that, but they had trouble understanding it because what happened over trying to put it into European words, and they remember at the time, or you know, the Western words, they said, they have a version of Morse. Well, this version of Morse is around 1,000 years before Morse code was. So no, they don't have a version of Morse. We have our own way of, and the difference of with our language is we would take words, break them down alphabetically into each letter, and then we'd try to transmit those. What they did was because they needed error correction. Right. And the problem was because traveling long distances and they didn't have a lexicon of words or letters to transfer from. Literally, it was a spoken language they had to convert into that. So what they did was they would say long legs come walking to here, which sounded unnecessarily flowery. But the use of words like, you know, come to the place, you know, where you eat or something like that. There was a redundancy built into it. So they would say, take the long legs here, because without long legs could mean, you know, trees.
Well, and there was a weird different version of that. Before the nationwide cellular network was as good as it is now, there would be so many times that signals would drop that me and my friend CJ would drop into just the unspoken pattern. Like we didn't have to explain what we were doing. It's just, you would just repeat the same phrase 7 times. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I'm going to the place. And then,
look crazy in public, but.
Which was fine because at least I was relatively confident that he understood what was going on.
Yeah.
And I guess the thing that the paradigm we had to get over here was we're used to systems that encrypt written words, you know, and in the case of the drum, you know, communication was they were never written words to begin with. It was entirely verbal. So they were trying to use compression systems for that. And as you said before, like, you know, just using the vowels or things like this. So then you had to use 2 descriptors to make sure you knew which one that it was, you know, like, you know, the long legs as opposed to green legs, which would be tree trunks, or I'm making this up, I'm butchering. So, and that was a big step where here we have one group of people trying to understand what other group of people who, you know, share the same almost everything, you know, yet.
Yeah, that's the other part. Like language differences. And I think I've talked before about the linguistics course that I took, languages of science fiction. Mm-hmm. We're talking about 2 essentially genetically identical types of thought. And even then we can't barely understand what's going on.
Yeah. And so you take something totally different. So the example I wanted to show you was, man, this is like, it's 2 images side by side. I sent it to Bryce, and man, like, this is like a metaphor for everything. This is, I want to put this on a poster. I want to blow this up. I want to show this everywhere. I don't know if you see it yet.
So we got the headline from reads, Daily Star: Genius Monkey Sharpens Rock Before Smashing Against Zoo Window in Escape Bid. Oh my God. Look at
wow.
That.
And so it's this monkey is, little monkey has realized there's a thing called glass, and glass has trapped him. Like glass, the glass is sort of like something. He knows this. He's trying to figure out what this is, but he's like, man, guys, I think our world is a lie. I'm maybe imagining what he said. That
I believe these force fields are not as impervious as we think they are. Oh
my God. So regular rocks don't work. This is really strong glass. But this monkey found out, if I take the rock and I sharpen the rock. And so you see this video of this monkey has got a rock that he's apparently sharpened, who then hits the glass, and then boom, shatters.
That's incredible.
And it's that safety glass like you see on automobiles.
So it doesn't go everywhere, but it cracks immediately. And
he watched Hacking the System and discovered how to do this.
Hey, speaking of which, here's a little life pro tip that I did not know. Oh. Did you guys know that your headrest, so imagine your car,
spikes,
your headrest, if you remove it, they end in a spike for the purpose of smashing out windows. I did that. How did I only learn that Like, I've been alive a long time.
I mean, then, it's no one reads the manual in their car. You know,
that's one of those things I know, but I'm sure I will forget in a crisis situation.
Yes.
I mean, how else are they going to sell you the thing that is sitting in my apartment is not even in the car?
But it's like, the escape
device? It's one of those skills. Yeah, escape devices.
The thing that...
It cuts the seatbelt and it cracks over the window. Exactly. It's sitting in my key chest.
With the monkey doing that, though. And that's like, I'm like, man, like, that's... That monkey, that's the smartest. I've never done anything that smart in my life.
I mean, yeah, he's the Einstein of monkeys. So what are we doing? Locking him up in a cage.
Well, yeah. And I wonder what happens next with his monkey. Like, now he knows he can do something.
I mean, he can't unknow it, right?
He can't unknow it. And that information will be passed to other monkeys, probably. Unless
that's the big question, is we don't know if there are information units that can be transmitted from individual monkeys to each other.
We can see them do things like food washing, things like that seem to be anything directly involving food. They seem to be very good at doing. But, you know, that's animal behavior scientists will tell you what's interesting is things you will never see. Like you'll never see two chimpanzees. They will never pick up a 2x4 and help each other carry it.
Or they really? Also will never trade something away in the current moment for a known future benefit later on. Sure. Like, in fact, that's one of the things in The Rational Optimist by Matt Ridley. He talks about how, you know, humans' big trick is that we're able to specialize and engage in trade where it's like, I'm going to give this up. I'm going to give up one of these things that I'm very good at making so that you will give me two of those things that you're very good at making.
Yeah.
That is a transaction that apparently all ape brains, except for ours, can't really grasp.
Wow.
And that's, you know, one of the things that like he gets into is looking at our not just any, we use the term ancestors to speak about earlier forms, but we have our cousins, so to speak.
Right.
You know, now we're finding out there's so many different variations of hominids have lived here that we're not even related to, we share ancestors with, but can it on. That might have been a big factor of why they never succeeded, you know, the way we did, was that they may have lacked certain capacities.
Yeah.
And
lack of an economics degree.
You know, we may only have a fractional capacity for abstract thought or planning, but just that might be enough.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
All right. Next one here, gentlemen. Brian,
yes.
I'm not going to tell you how to live your life or what you need to be
goodness.
Doing.
I was really worried about that.
Yeah. Brian has been building again, compound can be a positive word too. Can be a positive word, okay?
I mean, call it what it is. That's what it is.
Yes, compound. Yeah, Texas.
One might say an artist collective, but that's fine. Compound
tracks. A headquarters,
tracks.
A building would be an office part. Yeah.
A guest house.
Yeah.
If you ever thought about putting this thing out in Airbnb,
yeah,
I've got a suggestion for you.
Okay.
Okay. You know, we talk every time of year we start this, we get the first story and I do my reminder. Hey folks, just so you know, Halloween's around the corner. So we're going to get all these stupid stories because, you know, I mean, they're fun, but sometimes they're taken a little too seriously, but it's like, I wonder why we get the story came out now. Well, the story now is, house supposedly haunted by tall man in his in tall hat terrifies Airbnb renters.
What was it, like Abraham Lincoln's birthplace? He shows up as a ghost. He's like, I'm here again.
I was shot in the theater.
How much did they cost?
How did the play end?
Apparently, their house is haunted, and they rented out an Airbnb and tell you how haunted the house is.
You know what? It was before so I'm reading the New York Post headline, how a couple turned their haunted dream home into a moneymaker. I was reading this backwards. I was reading this as a ghost has haunted my Airbnb, and now I can't use it. But no, you can make money on this. People will want to sit in a...
Dude, when we are able to share more of the details about this particular property... It is the closest thing to a real haunted property that I can conceive of with my skeptical mind. It is definitely haunted by a travesty of justice. It's crazy.
Local KOMU-8 calls it the House on Hobo Hill. Mm. So, oh my goodness.
I mean, it is a great spooky looking old house. I will give you that. It looks...
It could look like, older.
It could look older.
It could look older.
You're like, eh, I don't know. Can you crappy it up a bit?
Yeah, maybe. I think if you have a haunted house, even if you're renting it, that gives you some leniency to have it be a little dusty, a little dirty, some cobwebs, little schmutz on the crown.
I'll tell you this much. There was a night that I spent with Brett Rounceville, the Amtrekker, mm-hmm. where he was shooting some stuff, and in an allegedly haunted house. It was one of those that had been quote unquote investigated by the dudes or whatever. It was a thrill ride. Like, it kind of sucked to get to the end of the goofing around part of the evening and to lay down and realize, oh my God, I'm just laying down in a derelict house. But then on the flip side, there's the genuine terror of like, okay, well, transient heroin addicts are real. And they may be nearby. So it was a definite thrill ride. I think there's value in that, of telling people like, no, this is definitely, because I remember when we went in, mm-hmm. we were flippantly talking about our intention to do experiments with a Ouija board or whatever. And the guy was like, I wouldn't do that. And yeah, sure, he's probably putting on a show or whatever. But all of that kind of electrified the experience.
I want to start a new business, and it's going to call my supernatural B&B. So we'll figure out what the B&B stands for. Booze and
booze
and Boglins.
Yeah, Boglins. Boglins trademark.
Boogans.
So each one's going to offer its own unique experience. So I came up with a couple of my own, and I want to hear your suggestions too.
Pitches. All right, here, coming to the Shark Tank.
My idea is one is going to be one that's the studio of demonic possession, where two or more people show up there and rent it, and one of you is going to be possessed by a malevolent, dark, evil spirit during the night.
Okay,
oh, wow. But okay,
a little more argumentative, you know, maybe a little more, and maybe it has nothing to do with the fact that like the tap water tastes terrible and no towels, but it's going to be.
Wait. So what you do is you get two people, like a couple, right? And then you you kind of gaslight one of them. You intentionally make everything frustrating.
You make it weird for one of them, and the other like, no, it's fine for me.
Yeah. If one person has an uncomfortable experience because one side of the bed is really lumpy and the springs kind of poke through, that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, one side of the bed, you release like, you know, fart gas or something. And, of course. And then the other one, you do a directional sound, and it's just this constant but only one of them is receiving that. The other one is just like, no, you sincerely sound crazy.
Not a lot of haunting, a lot of discomfort I'm hearing.
It's possession. The idea that, you know, when one person starts to get very irritable, you're like, oh, it's because they're possessed by the dark spirit. Whenever you push back the bed and you see some sort of satanic, you know, writing there. Okay. That's one idea. Another idea is my alt universe place. Once you step through this doorway, you are in an alternate universe where it's almost exactly like our universe, but it just deviated slightly somehow now.
This is like that episode of Sliders when they realize that it's not the Golden Gate Bridge, it's the Azure State Gate Bridge. And they realize that it's almost their home, close enough that some people are like, well, maybe we could just stay there.
We'll just stay here.
But definitely not their home.
Like every episode of Sliders?
It was only near the end of the first season that they explored the possibility of this, like, well, what if it's close enough?
They got kind of tired. Yeah. But yeah, fun show. But so, yeah, that's another idea. Any suggestions here?
So what are some of the things that you would change?
I would definitely do a cryptid thing where it's just like you just announce like you make up a creature. You're like, oh, the Slimening. And then it's like, what is it? We're like, oh, nobody could agree. Some people say it says Gendrils.
And this is the slightly off universe?
No. We're pitching Airbnbs with unique experiences.
So you're pitching a new one.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So this one would be a pitch where it's like some people call it the Black Pudding and you can hear it trickling in the night or whatever. And then you got a bunch of like slimy sounds that happen.
Okay.
And slime. What about like a Freddy Krueger one? He's like, oh yeah, no, there's the Dream Creeper. You know,
reverse, where it's just like, look, here's the thing. There are two spirits. Mm-hmm. One is the Dream Creeper. The other is the Dream Maker. and they switch rooms every night. We can't guarantee which one you'll get, but you will get one of them. And you will know when you wake up which one visited you. And so
I'm looking at my brochure here. Explain to me, what's the difference between the Dream Creeper and the other one? How would I know which one it is?
Well, I mean, one figures out your darkest secret and exploits it for your
the thing about the
to make unpleasant dreams. Mm-hmm. The other realizes your greatest hope and brings it to you in the middle of the night.
And this is not helping me.
Yeah. So
there's a pudding either way. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of them just has like you when you check in, they give you a blindfold and they make you do all of the sleepover scary stuff you would do. So a bowl of spaghetti and a bag full of grapes and more black pudding. Just oozing noises. I think oozing noises is probably a good. We can sprinkle that on maybe all of these ideas.
Cool. So
hold on. What about the challenge of like there's an angry spirit here, and nobody's able to sleep the entire night. And then what you do is you have some kind of rudimentary AI that just watches faces, and the moment it detects the beginning of REM sleep. Mm-hmm. It either chirps or
plays REM
or plays REM. But the point is, like, at that level where you can't consciously know why you're being pulled out of sleep, it just never quite lets you get to sleep by irritating you a few different ways.
It's called having a child.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I think we're onto some great ideas here. So I think that'll be our new plan. Okay. Be the Weird Things B&B.
The worst B&B. On the planet.
That's what the Guaranteed. W in Weird B&B stands for, because everything else is an acronym.
Right. Yeah. You guys want to do picks?
Yeah, man. Picks? I got a weird pick. Talking about weird, you want a weird thing?
On the Weird Things podcast.
Yeah, I got something weird. Freaking Dark Crystal's weird. I've only watched the first episode. Have you watched the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance yet?
I couldn't make it past the first 8 minutes.
The giant information dump that is beginning of a video game.
The Gelfling sort of thing, and I'm like, it was, the answer is, I'm waiting for somebody to convince me to make it through, because then we're like, oh, let's watch GLOW season 3. Season 3 is on Netflix, as far as I'm concerned.
It's very good.
Not their strong suit.
Wait, what? Season 3 is great.
Of GLOW?
Of GLOW, yes.
Oh, it's on. It's on. I'll Welcome to my new B&B Thunderdome.
Let's go to the transition to the ring.
We're back to DJ Bryce in Bartertown.
I just was like, first one was rough. I'm like, they're in a boring place. These character arcs don't really matter whether the consequences are, but I think they'd be more interesting if they're no longer here. Hmm. I'm like, let's watch the second episode. We watched the second episode. I'm like, we're two episodes into the will they won't they kind of thing, and the stakes weren't very high for me, and the relationships about people I was just indifferent to, and like they just each other. The earlier seasons had something big they were trying to move towards.
Yeah,
here I'm like, do we get to keep doing this crappy show in a crappy casino where the stakes are meh?
Yeah. My last thought, like I do agree that they don't. Really, they focus a lot on the character, you know, relationship and connections and stuff, but they don't really show you a lot of the cool, like, oh, what would it be like to do a show in Casino? Anyway, Dark Crystal.
I love character. I mean, Once Upon a Hollywood, okay? Big fan here. I love character stuff.
Sure.
When I'm invested in it and when the outcome affects me, where here I'm like, they don't. Okay, so what?
So the
Dark Crystal
Age of Resistance is a prequel to the movie, if you remember it from your childhood. In the movie, when you were a kid, it was a story of monstrous Skeksis, these bizarre vulture monsters that ruled the land, and the peace-loving, you know, Native American counterpart. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I don't know, a few Gelfling that run around in the woods. Very different, very bold decision they made to tell a fundamentally different story. Because this takes place before it, this is a time that the Gelfling work for the Skeksis, that the Gelflings are plentiful, they're everywhere. The Skeksis are, they are perceived as benevolent stewards of the Crystal of Time, again, very far... they look like the monsters that we know, but they are perceived by society not as those monsters. And so you get kind of three nested narratives in the very first episode. But the important part is that this is at the very beginning of the corruption of the Skeksis, where they're sort of just, you know, skimming a little bit off the top of the power of the Crystal of Truth. And it's not working as well as they had hoped. And then the first episode ends with somebody figure like, hey, man, check this out. Grabs a Gelfling, stands it in front of the Dark Crystal, sucks out the soul of the Gelfling, and is like, yo, but drink this. And then they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Sure. So much life. We're going to live forever. So it's you're seeing the beginning of the corruption. And you could tell that they're just a little bit conflicted about what they're up to. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the whole thing,
does it mostly follow the Skeksis's or?
Well, like Gelfling? I said, there's three different nested narratives. Sure. One of our main characters, you watch his girlfriend is the one that gets her soul sucked out or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Spoiler but, alert.
Yeah, for the first episode. But the whole thing is at that point, there's this spreading corruption through the land. Whole thing's an allegory for like climate change or whatever your favorite environmental disaster narrative is. But meanwhile, the representation of Skeksis as Middle Ages feudal Italian monarchs or aristocrats, all of that bizarre set design, I just found delightful. And what a crazy trick to simultaneously, you want to make the puppetry the star of the show, but you also want to use CGI to enhance certain elements of it.
Yeah, it looks like it's a mix from the trailer that we're
watching. It definitely is. And they do a really good job of sort of cueing you on which parts are which. It's so delightfully weird. It's just very weird. And I really loved how weird it is.
Yeah. So 10 episodes, you're only through the first one?
Yeah, I only saw the first one. Okay. But I've enjoyed what I've seen so far. It seemed like a worthy experience. And man, if you dig world building, they have thought out this world and then went back in time and said, okay, what would this world look like before it all went to crap? Mm-hmm. And then this is a world at the precipice of going to crap.
I wonder how you do a big conflict, because it's a prequel, right? So we kind of know what the world will be like at the beginning of the movie. So I wonder what the threat is from episode 1 through 10.
Well, what we know from the movie is that the Gelfling are all but decimated. That there are some good guys and then, you know, hollowed out husks monsters that are in charge of everything. So I assume that there'll be a few Skeksis that we are made to think are redeemable or have good attributes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we'll care about the characters and certain Gelflings that we hope do or don't get caught. And then, and then we're still waiting for the Native American inserts to show up. Hmm. But again, yeah. this is all my read just from the first episode, but I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
I worry sometimes when there's a huge info dump in front of movies like Star Wars, it worked great. It sort of set the pace, whatever, but then it just jumps right into the action. Hmm. Game of Thrones, I love. There was none. You're set into this world where the big question, you're kind of going, what are the rules here? What's different? What do they believe? What don't they believe? And you get that bit by bit until you built out that whole world. Mm-hmm. Here, like, man, like that info dump at the beginning was huge. And then
it was a lot even for my tastes. And I tend to be pretty forgiving of those because I'm like, okay, give me the pitch. Yeah. And they did. I'm like, this pitch is really long.
I got a pick. Yeah.
What you got?
I have been binging this. So the Righteous Gemstones is on, and so I have HBO again. I've been taking the opportunity to go and see something that someone who I guess is not on this podcast recommended, which is HBO's Succession. It's a corporate drama about a dynasty, a media dynasty Roy, what was his name? Lecter, something, Roy. It's the Roy family.
From the outside, what little I've seen of the previews, this looks like what I would imagine is the fantasy of what happens behind the scenes at a Fox or whatever with a Rupert Murdoch kind of figure.
Heavily based on Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah. And so you've got him and then a bunch of his kids and in-laws and all of them vying for you know, different power plays, right? Oh, I want to because at the beginning in the first episode, the father gets sick, and so it's like, well, what are we gonna do? And you know, do we push ahead? Do we try to go without him? And so it becomes a little bit of jockeying back and forth. And so I do think it has this weird thing, and I don't know if this is me, if my wanting this would make it a better show, but, you know, like you remember, so the U.S. Office, right? The first few seasons of the U.S. Office, like you actually saw them doing work, right? Yeah. Like they, you kind of like, oh, okay, this is a paper company. You'd see them doing paper company things. And then by the end, you were like, okay, this is just like, there's people around doing stuff, but not necessarily working. And all of these people are high-level CEO or, you know, C-level employees. And so you don't really see them do much, right? And so I think that's a weird thing that I don't think it gets into. But maybe these people wouldn't get into that anyway. But
yeah, I would read that, and I haven't seen it, but mm-hmm. but to my mind, that reads like the cast of Cheers, where I don't think we ever see – anybody delivering mail, or I don't even know what Norm did in Cheers, but this is just not a story of what they do. It's the story of what they do when they're not doing the other thing.
Yeah. Though I think for me, cause I think I've been burned on other dramas in the past for doing the similar thing. Like, one of the faults of House of Cards for me is like you completely lose frame perspective with like the country.
Right.
And so you just kind of have to keep being told the people are angry.
Right.
And there's not a lot of like one-on-one with that stuff. So that's a very like weird ancillary thought, but I've really been enjoying Succession. Probably one of the better theme songs, but also one of the longest opening credit sequences.
And HBO, you know, loves them long openings, yeah, man.
And it's a very good theme, and you hear it a lot in the sound. It's cool. It's Succession is cool. And so season 2 is airing now on Sundays. I think they're about halfway through. But I think it's really neat.
Cool. I'll give that a try.
Yeah.
My pick, and again, I've only had it for a little over a week, and I don't know. So far, it's been great. It's been kind of everything I've wanted in this sort of thing, and that is the Apple Card, the Apple credit card.
Oh, really? You got one?
Yes. And what I liked about it was I wanted a way to keep track of where my spending was going, where it was doing, that was super, super easy. Now, most credit card services offer, go to our website, pull up this list, or do this sort of thing here, but we live in a modern age, and there's been, I think, some other credit cards have come out there with, you know, modern ones, sort of similar services. So what makes the Apple Card really good, in my opinion, is that it has this built-in, like you go into your wallet app and it shows you all of your recent expenses right there. Mm-hmm. You can pay right from that app. You just, you know, within there, you just click the button to pay off your credit card. It shows you your balance. It's got that. It's got, if you need a credit card number to buy something online, you can pull that number up. Yeah. It comes with a physical credit card if you want, which is
the notorious titanium card, right?
Yeah, it's a big friggin' heavy. It's a heavy card. It's a good weapon there. Which what was really cool though is when you get it, it comes in this case, this sort of, you know, this folder, and you open it up and it says, hold your phone here, yeah, over the card. You hold your phone there, and it activates it. Mm-hmm. And so their customer service, there's actually use it through text messaging. So if you have a problem, you can just text message them and get a response. You know, instead of doing points, it's cash back. Like every day, at the end of the day, your purchases, you get whatever, you know, percentages back.
Right.
So, you know, I've been very happy with the Amazon card. I use that. Like if you shop on Amazon a lot, like get the Amazon Chase card, because like you get like 5% back on Amazon. It just is like, and these things, they make a difference, you know, and like, you know, the Apple card's like 1% or 2% back depending upon that. And if you think, you know, I use a credit card instead of a debit card because I just pay it off at the end of the month, but mm-hmm. because of the points, it just works out well. And at the end of the year, that's a couple $1,000, you know, ends up being. So,
yeah.
So far, so good. I've enjoyed it.
So,
you know, I've been useful.
I know that's part of the cash back, the 1%, 2%, 3% changes based on. So it's like 1% if you use the physical card, 2% if you use the digital Apple Pay, and then it's 3% on Apple products or stuff on the Apple's, like through the phone.
Yeah.
Are you finding that you're hitting a lot of those 2 and 3% things? Because I know around here, like we have HEB is the local grocery store here, and mm-hmm. I've never seen the Apple Pay things work there.
And yeah, I'm looking at my purchases, like McDonald's, who ordered that. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of 2%s here, of 2%s here.
Okay.
That moment that Andrew could think that either us or the audience doesn't know about his deep affection for McDonald's.
Once a week on Sunday and cheat days when we do McDonald's.
The interesting thing for me is the no fees thing. So like there's no late payment fee at all or foreign transaction fees. I mean, you still have to pay off your balance, of course. Sure. But
And then you do have to pay interest on, right. You know, but the fee, the needling of like, gotcha here too.
That seems really interesting. I don't know. It seems very cool. It seems like they're trying to do a lot of cool stuff. I know there are spending apps for any credit card. I've never liked any of the ones that I've found, or like I was using Mint for a little while, but it is so overrun with ads, and there's no way, or at least when I was using it, to like stop recommending me credit cards and all these other like pop-up stuff. So like having it all be through the phone seems pretty convenient.
Are you guys fired up over the new iPhone announcement coming up?
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. Just one more thing on this was though, is just that it's interesting. We talk about companies are good at what they're incentivized for. And Apple thinks, well, we know X number of people carry a balance, so making that percentages is really good. But we also know that every time somebody uses Apple Pay, they get a part of that transaction fee. You know, they make that. Mm-hmm. And so I think they've designed, from my point of view, and again, there may be other mileage, but I think they designed a great product as far as using a credit card there because of what it does and does not do. And the reason you're not, like, Mint became a crappy experience is because, like, oh, we'll make more money if we push these ads towards you or whatever. And Apple has created this thing where you want to use this because that immediate gratification of, I bought this, and the end of the day, look, you made 12 cents today, and it shows up in this little thing here. You see that, you're like, yay, 12. For some reason, as it accrues, that psychological reinforcement, you know, it's a little, it's good, and that's also probably perhaps insidious. Yeah. But so just the final note on that.
Yeah.
But as far as the next phone, like the whole Apple ecosystem, where they're going.
What are the new things about the new phone? I heard that there will probably be a third lens, a wide angle lens.
Three cameras on there, yeah.
But I would rather have a wider angle selfie lens because I just don't have a very long arm.
I'm pretty sure that'll be on there too. There'll be some kind of improvement on that.
Maybe
the
because the Pixel phones have the like ultra wide mode, so you hit it and it like zooms like way out. And I really like that. You know, if you ever try to take a photo of a lot of people all at once,
yeah.
You know that's just a cool thing. But
here's what I'm gonna like about it. It won't be broken like the Lightning port on my current phone. This is the first year ever that I set out a update cycle. Yeah. And as a result, you know, by just living in my pockets, enough lint gets in there or whatever that the Lightning port totally hosed now.
I'm surprised you didn't just take it in for clean them out. Or something.
I went through six or seven iterations of getting closer and closer to everything working, and then now I'm at the place where the recommendation is take a piece of wire and just scrape everything and hope you don't break it.
I had that problem with mine, and I tried a few different things, and then I went to the Apple store, and that guy knew. Like, I'm like, oh, what do I need to do? I think it's broken. The Lightning port. He's like, oh, let me take a look. Done.
All right. He fixed it. Andrew, you're not trying to talk me out of upgrading to a new iPhone, are you? What's going on here?
Host. Your phone's hosed.
Thank you.
I will say.
I'm talking you into the replacement value of the one you have is you can get more money for it if it's not broken.
Yeah.
Here, yes, more cameras. I think Bryce, you said, I think that's great. The thing that I've been hearing, and it's a matter of when it will happen, is right now, the depth data stuff that the phone gets right now, when you take a photo, there is a depth map of that too, which shows you, you know, what's closer to the camera, it's further away for both. The front one uses the points. The back one uses both cameras to be able to capture this depth map, which is incredible. And I've heard that they're looking into adding in more like, you know, we talked years ago, we talked about like the Lytro camera, which was able to like have variable sort of focal points. And I was all kind of dismissive. I'm like, you'll be able to do that in software. You're not going to want a standalone camera for this. And that stuff's
This is the one that was a camera that like you never had to focus because it took all possible focal lengths at the same time.
Yeah.
yeah, it took a number of them, and it was like, oh my god, this is neat tech, but it's not. Nobody's going to want to. Not real people aren't going to walk around Lytros. And we're just going to get that inside of light field tech. It's going to end up inside of phones and stuff, which is what's happening. You know, because it's just, it seems the natural evolution. Wider angles, as Bryce says, go wider angles, bigger chips, because that way after the fact you can frame your shots. Now is doing depth. It's like lots of depth data, because Apple's talking about. Big on Tim Cook won't shut up about AR, how excited he is about augmented reality. Mm-hmm. And we think there will be another Apple product, which will be augmented reality glasses. The way this relates to the phone is, if you can get those things to capture 3D. So if you take photos of stuff and they're in 3D.
So the idea is get ahead of the curve. We start using this stuff for the next, two, three, five, 7 years. And then 7 years from now, they're like, oh, one more thing. All the photos you've been taking for the last 7 years
have 3D.
You can now look at 3D representations of everything.
Probably a much sooner timeline than that. I've shown you on the phone before the little demo of when you use the front-facing camera, how you can get the side view profile.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That is insane, telling developers, like, hey, look what you can do. The AI algorithms right now for image processing stuff is insane. Like, did you hear about the one that can, like, I think we talked about this before, like it can take, if you have a doorway, like an open doorway, and you have a flash, you can see what's inside the other room.
Based on reflections on the other side of the door?
Because of the timing of the photons bouncing around the interior of the other room. If you have a camera that has a super, like super, super fast camera, like we're talking like, you know, picosecs, some crazy sort of length of doing this, mm-hmm. It can actually measure like radar or whatever, this wave just came in from here. So there's like, if you look up like deep learning, image processing, like seeing around corners and stuff, there's all this crazy stuff. Like the stuff I think Google's using now is the AI to enhance Photoshop in the dark, because AI can improve, can figure out like this is right. What it is. They have a Google has a technique for taking like blurry photos and giving them higher resolution. So all this stuff, and there's 3D processing stuff of like, here's how to take a couple 2D images. We've got a network that's been trained on enough faces and things like this. It can reconstruct the backs of people's heads or whatever. So I think we're going to be seeing some sort of physical AR device sooner than later. You know, I think probably next year is probably going to be that, but we can see, you can tell where Apple's going by where they go with the development kits. And there's tons of AR stuff. We talk about occlusion now, where if I put an augmented reality object in the video screen of what we're looking at, I can wave my hand in front of it, which is a big deal. Like it's real time.
And it could just basically just sketch it out, because it knows what the frame before and the frame after look like. And it's like, well, let's just draw
that out. It actually uses a neural network trained on hands and faces and bodies and stuff.
Okay. Oh, wild.
Wow.
Yeah, because it has the full image there. But then what it does is they bought this company a couple years ago that was working on, like, so there's so much crazy sort of stuff under the hood going on there. I think this year we're going to see a bigger step closer towards it. We're going to see, I think, another layer or something added to photos.
I am confident that amazing stuff is coming, but I am really surprised at how little, for as awesome as all the AR demos we've seen before from Apple have been, I'm surprised at how little it's affected my life outside of using the tape measure app. That's about it.
Because it's dumb. I mean is that, like, Apple, for the longest time, people said, we want touchscreen IMAX. We want touchscreen IMAX. And Apple's like, you don't. There's a thing called Gorilla Arm, where if you hold your hand up for too long on a screen touching it, your arm gets fatigued. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, now that we have iPads and stuff, we're not really like, you know, they'll put it in like some laptops and stuff for desktops. Yeah, you don't really want that, because it's a pain in the ass to have to lift your arm up. The problem with AR is you're holding a stupid phone up. And you see these experiences, great. And I played with the demo kits and I'm like, man, this gets lame. I got to hold my phone up here and stare at this forever. And Apple knows that. Apple knows that's not the way to experience AR, because they're the ones that told us, you know, about Gorilla Arm and stuff. And that's why they want the glasses or whatever, like Magic Leap or HoloLens. I think that's where they know that's the real application.
Right.
Because it is. I agree. Like, you're like, it's cool, but the tape measure. Other than that, like, okay, I'm going to hold my phone up. I'm going to look through the window and go, oh, amazing.
And I can almost see whatever the Minecraft world.
And with like with the new phones, a big part of it is software stuff, right? Like that's where they can be the most secretive and have cool stuff. Mm-hmm. So like I've been using the iOS 13 beta on my phone pretty much since the first public beta came out, and it's neat. There's some new stuff. You know, the sharing screen is a little more robust and has more options on it. There's a night mode for people who are interested in night mode. So there's native, you know, night color schemes. The big thing, which you don't need a new phone for, but they have the default Apple keyboard has a swiping based input now. So like the old swipe keyboard,
right.
Or a Gboard has it.
What was the benefit of the swipe keyboard?
Because it's way quicker. So you just swipe your word.
Got it.
And you know you can do it with one finger instead of two thumbs. It's interesting. And seeing that on iPad, where typing on iPad is especially weird if you're like handheld right now, having swipe on that will be really interesting. But I don't know. I think it'll have to. It's all about features, and I wonder what other new features they can add, since they've already done the full screen display. They've already got the Face ID stuff.
This year, there's a blue unicorn you could pretend to be.
Yeah, I think that's you reach the upper limit of like can't, you know, it's last several years like now your selfies can do this, this, and this, and it reaches a point of like, all right. But you do find a lot of stuff like looking around at the developer code for 3.0. Like I said before, the augmented reality, they changed the format sizes for the images. It went from like iPhone formats to like almost like a 4:3 ratio, like a ratio like you would expect per eye in 3D goggles. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of little stuff behind the scenes that like, man, this is like we're making this for hardware that has not been released yet, which, you know, they've done before when they changed before the iPad came out. They changed like, oh, this is the sizing for screens. Like, well, there's more than two screen sizes here. What's going on, guys?
So the question, I guess, is do you think that they're going to make hardware or are they going to make a software API for other companies to make hardware?
They'll glasses. Make the hardware. They'll make their own physical eyeglasses or whatever.
Eyeglasses.
Yeah, they will make the hardware. They will make it. You know, they want to. You know, the reaction we've given when we first hear about, like, you know, the stage is set for them, because like the iPad came out after there were tablets that sounded awesome, but then sort of just weren't because of the limitations.
Windows tablets.
And now with HoloLens, you know, everybody does like, oh, the field of view is this, and Magic Leap, oh, the field of view is only this. If Apple comes out and nails it with like, well, this is what you really wanted.
Mm-mm.
But I don't think we'll see it this year, but I do think we'll probably see more AR-like things. Yeah. In
right on.
So, cool. All right. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.